Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Sandy Barber, the athletic director of Penn State, will join Steve on the program as well here this afternoon. May have the opportunity to get into the apology that A-Rod has made for his PED-related mistakes. Here's one apology I'm waiting for. I'm sorry I lied and lied and then lied some more and then lied some more. I'd love to hear Yankee fans' thought on A-Rod right now. All right, do you want him back or not? That'll be interesting. Maybe we can get into that here a little bit later on. Although I do give him credit after finally accepting the fact that he was guilty, he did take full responsibility for the mistakes that led to a suspension. It's about 3 years too late, isn't it? Anyway, we can get into that a little bit later on as well. All that headed your way here on the Steve Jones Show, plus Penn State's matchup with Wisconsin. You just heard Steve talk about that a few minutes ago. And we'll do that when we return on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Lewisburg Builder Supply can make you beautiful
with radiance.
It's the new Ace Paint Studio at Lewisburg Builder Supply.
So awesome. So cool.
Featuring the number one rated label in semi-gloss paint, Clark and Kensington.
That's longhand for sheer perfection.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware folks.
And all the helpful folks at Lewisburg Builder Supply with the latest hot new colors in the new Ace Paint Studio.
It's a beauty revolution where you're in control.
Painting should be as fun as the colors you pick.
Get all the helpful tips and guidance you need.
From the moment you decide to paint to the moment you complete the project.
You can't go wrong. Lewisburg Builder Supply has over 1,300 Clark and Kensington colors.
Their paint and primer in one is the top-rated choice by a leading consumer magazine.
Cuts down work time, comes in any color you want, makes your life beautiful.
Simply brilliant.
Only at Lewisburg Builder Supply. That is shorthand for wonderful. Lewisburg Builder Supply, Route 15 and Hayford Road, Lewisburg.
As an entrepreneur, you're always on the go. So turn your mobile phone into a business phone system with Grasshopper, the entrepreneur's phone system. Get a new business number or keep your current one. Sound professional with a main greeting and multiple extensions that forward callers to your mobile phone. You can even get voicemails transcribed. Join over 150,000 small businesses who stay connected with Grasshopper. See how it works at grasshopper.com, the entrepreneur's phone system.
State Farm, this is Andrea.
Yeah, what if I get into an accident in, say, Accident, Arkansas?
Anywhere in the U.S., State Farm has you covered.
Uh-huh, and if I hit the only tree in Lone Pine, California?
We'll send a tow truck right over.
What if I get dinged in Denton?
North Carolina or Texas?
Both.
Then we'll send two trucks.
Well played.
State Farm handles more claims than any other company. Over 35,000 per day. Call 1-800-STATE-FARM and get to a better state.
The stations of Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation and Zionsboro Ford have teamed up to develop smarter and safer driving among students of all ages through Susquehanna Smart Drive. I am Jack from Zionsboro. Did you know that motor vehicle crashes are the leading cause of death for kids from ages 2 to 9? At 11, I may not be old enough to drive just yet, but I can practice being a good passenger by always wearing my seatbelt. Please make sure your kids are buckled up every time they get in the car. This message brought to you by the stations of Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation, including News Radio 1070 WKOK and Zionsboro Ford, proud supporters of Susquehanna Smart Drive.
Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Steve Jones, K. Herr Esquire. Kind of moving you up the ranks there with that stuff.
I like that. That's nice. I didn't even have to go to college for that. I actually alluded to the fact that you'd have more on the Big Ten's decision today, but I also talked about A-Rod's written apology that comes, I think, 2 years too late.
Well, that's not gonna. That's barely gonna make the cut on today's show.
I'm sure. No, it's a busy day. I realize that. I just thought it was kind of ridiculous. If I'm the Yankees, here's what I do. I say, okay, you can be in uniform for every game, but your job is to make sure your teammates don't trip coming in and out of the dugout. I realize that's an expensive position that you're paying there, but I would not put him on the field because obviously he had no thought about his team or the fan base when not only when he had this biogenesis scandal, but then denied it the whole time and then all of a sudden goes, I take full responsibility for my mistakes that led to my suspension for last year.
Well, the Yankees are in a tough spot because they're paying a lot of money contractually for him, and that's the tough spot that they're in. So, what do you do? Try and get at least something out of it. How about that? Try to get something out of it.
Well, I wouldn't let him on the field though. I understand you have to pay a lot of money. But sometimes I think principal has to step up here, and if you and I don't think they're going to be able to deal him. I don't think anybody's going to want him. I mean, right now you talk about, and I use the term loosely, the damaged goods going around in professional sports. Look at Ray Rice. Nobody in the NFL is showing any interest in him. I can't imagine A-Rod would have much interest in him right now.
Right. Well, that'll be for another day. Patrick Chambers, as expected, has been reprimanded by the Big Ten and Penn State, fined $10,000.
I do have a question, and I know you're going to get to it, so I apologize for being premature with this, but why the fine to the university?
I don't know.
Okay. I thought maybe there was a reason for it. It confused me that the fine went to the university. That's all.
I have no idea.
I mean, the university didn't know. I mean, I know he's a representative of the university in that instance, but like, you know, the athletic director didn't make the comment. So I just don't get the university fine. Why not fine, you know, Patrick Chambers himself?
Look, all right. Well, a little bit more. I don't know what I don't know why doesn't but it came down to the fact that, as we said yesterday, it would either be a fine or suspension. It was a fine. What was interesting to me about what they did is this: there are four kinds of leaders in the world. Four kinds. There are leaders. Those who see the big picture, have foresight, you know, make decisions in such a way that may have some benefit now, but then down the road proves out to be exactly the direction to go in. That's a leader. Even if it's temporarily unpopular, they know in the long run it's the right thing. Number two, there's decision makers. They make decisions. They do so all the time. They make them every single day. And 9.89 times out of 10, it's just a short-sighted thing. And it's a lot being done in the moment. They're decision makers. All right, I got to make a decision. Let's make a decision. No real thought of foresight or, you know, big picturing like that. They're decision makers. Third group are schemers. You know, they get out there. They mean no good, but they have the ability to make people think that they are doing something which is to their personal benefit but not to anybody else, or they're trying to protect their own backside. And the fourth kind are incompetents. For some reason, on the face of the earth, they have risen to this point in life where they're leading something and they're just not good at it. And those are the four kind that you have. When the Big Ten put out their release today about the reprimand, the fine, and that the matter was closed, That was a decision-making situation. It was not a leadership situation. And here's the reason why. The reason is as follows. I would have said, while the Big Ten recognizes a mistake was made on that play, a press conference or an interview is not the avenue to air a grievance. The coaching staff and the athletic department of Penn State knows this, thus under Rule 10.1 or whatever, blah, 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 blah. All right? What you've now done is, A, you've recognized a mistake was made, but B, you've also sent a message to all the other coaches in the league that that is not the proper avenue to air a grievance. And then you back that up with the reprimand and the fine. The Big Ten didn't do that. By recognizing a mistake was made and then following that up with, this is not the proper avenue to air a grievance. And the coaching staff at Penn State knows this, as does the university. Thus, a reprimand and a fine will be imposed of $10,000. That then sends a message to every coach across the board that mistakes will be made and that there are ways to air that grievance about the mistakes made, but it's not going to be in that kind of forum. Decision makers, as opposed to leaders. There's a big difference. I'm not saying anything should be done to said official, but to not recognize that there was a mistake. Oh, and there was a mistake. I mean, if you're going to sit there and tell me, oh, no, no, he did it just right. No, he didn't. Okay? But at the same time, it's a mistake. He made a mistake. That's fine. I understand that. He missed the call. And they could have sent a message to all the coaches in the Big Ten by saying, okay, mistake happened. We admit it happened. That's not how you air a grievance about it. That's not how you complain about it. There are other avenues to do that, but it's away from the media. Sounds big picture to me. Sounds like foresight to me. But to close it off the way they did, look, boom, you violated this, you didn't do that, you're reprimanded. Here, hold out your hand, I got a ruler. And, by the way, do you have a wallet? Now, we all know he was going to be either fined or suspended. It was assumed right afterward by all of us who have been around this thing for a long time that that's what would happen. We know what the rule is. We understand that. We understand that. And it's not a question of recognizing to appease anyone that a mistake was made. That's not what I'm saying here. That by being big enough to recognize that a mistake was made on the floor, but that is not the way to air a grievance about the mistake, as emotional as it may be, you're now sending a message to every coach. I don't care if it's hockey, gymnastics, basketball, football, whatever it may be, that it's not going to be tolerated despite the level that even if there was a mistake that we recognize there was a mistake, that it can't be tolerated. That's a big picture response, not a narrow response. One response is a leadership response. Another response is a decision-making response. The decision was made. You broke this rule. You didn't do this. Boom. Reprimand. $10,000 fine. Boom. Totally accepted. Understand that completely. Understand that completely. And as I pointed out yesterday, Kelly Pfeiffer, I can tell you no uncertain terms, in no uncertain terms, knows he made a mistake, but it was a mistake only. It wasn't anything deliberate or anything like that. It was just a mistake. We all make mistakes. I'll make mistakes as I broadcast the game. Pat will make mistakes as he coaches the game. Players will make mistakes as they play the game. Officials will make mistakes as they officiate the game. I got that. It's all part of the game. You try to clean up as many of them as possible. There's nobody out there that wanted a cleaner officiated game. You got players, coaches, and you got players, coaches who all want a clean game, but nobody wants a cleaner game more than the official does. Nobody does. Kelly Pfeiffer, I think, worked in the Big Sky Conference at one point. Now he's in the Big Ten. And I've announced enough games where he's officiated. I think he has a chance to be very, very good on a consistent basis. And I've even stated that on the broadcast. And he doesn't want to make that mistake because he wants to work more games. He doesn't want to make that mistake. He wants to be considered for the conference tournament. He doesn't want to make that mistake. He wants to be considered at some point in his career to be one of the regulars in the NCAA tournament. So you're trying to build, as you go through, you're trying to do the best job that you can to build up your personal resume as you go along because you have professional pride in what you're doing. He made a mistake. He called it wrong. It's only a guess on my part, but I think he saw somebody go down and guessed what happened. In all likelihood, that's probably the scenario as to how it played out, which that in itself is a mistake. An official cannot guess what happened. They can only call what did. They can only call what they saw or what they thought happened as they saw it. But there's nothing over the line here. There's nothing out of the ordinary here. It's just he made a mistake, and he made it at a really important time of the game. The Big Ten doesn't have to apologize for it. They don't have to say, you know, but just say, look, we realize there was an officiating mistake in review. That's all you have to say. Doesn't rip the official. It doesn't. You know, it's not, you know, it may appease some people, but that's not the reason I would say it. The reason I would say it is flat out. Same thing. A mistake was made in the officiating of a particular play in the game. And even though that mistake was made, every coach and every member knows that you cannot air a grievance about it in public. In a press conference, an interview, or any kind of public forum. Thus, under this rule, you're reprimanded and da-da-da and fine, the whole thing. Well, that sends a message to all the coaches. Not just, you did it, done, 10,000. It's like, okay, fine. So what they did and what they released, is what I expected. But again, that's a decision maker's decision as to how to handle it. That wasn't a leadership decision as to how to handle it. Big picture. Big picture. I mean, it's words, but you know what? After a while, I think everyone's getting a little sick, especially around here, of constantly walking the tightrope of words. Sandy Barber is going to join us on the show, 4:06 today. We're going to have Charlie Wilmoth, Bucks Dugout, coming up in the next half hour. Jeff Rice, 24/7 Sports, final half hour. So we've got a big show coming up today. And don't forget, at 5:05 today, Kevin gives us a complete rundown of the IndyCar season on the after show.
It was IndyCar Media Day, you know that. You didn't know that?
I would like to speak on behalf of every member of the audience. Not one of us knew that.
I did not do a good job of informing you then, did I?
No, it really screams of the irrelevancy.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Okay, more on the Pat Chambers fine and reprimand in a few minutes. Top of the hour, we'll have Sandy Barber, Penn State's athletic director. We're going to cover a wide range of topics, but of course off the top we'll talk about that. And then Jeff Rice, 24-7 Sports, a half hour from now. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors K, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Time now to talk about baseball. Let's talk about the Phillies for a moment. All right, so let's go to the Pirates. Charlie Wimmel from BucksDugout.com joins us. And Charlie, I was reading on CBS Sportsline last week that they were going through teams that improved themselves in the offseason. They actually listed the Pirates as one of the, a couple of teams that really improved themselves. Did they?
No. I think that when you lose somebody as important to the Pirates last two seasons as Russell Martin, and you only replace him, I'm not disparaging Francisco Cervelli, but when you downgrade to such a great degree from Martin to Cervelli, it's very hard to make up that difference elsewhere. I think, though, that it would have been really hard for them to retain Martin given the amount of money he ended up getting from the Blue Jays. And with that as the case, they did pretty well in trying to replace some of that talent by re-signing Francisco Liriano and adding a couple other guys they added. So I would say that they're not a better team than they were last year, but they did a decent job filling in some of the gaps.
Did they get enough value for Travis Snyder?
I think that trade, what's puzzling about that trade is not a matter of value, and it's hard to say how much value that it got because we don't know who the player to be named was. They probably did fine in terms of value. What was strange about it is that contending teams don't typically trade players who profile as members of their 50-man roster or their 25-man roster without getting major league talent in return. And what they got is, it would seem, the opposite of that: two pitchers in the low minors. So that was a little bit strange, but I think it's part of a trend in which teams are both trying to build for the future and trying to keep their teams competitive in the present. And maybe the Pirates figure that Andrew Lambeau will be as good or nearly as good as Travis Snyder was last year.
All right, next part. They did that, which ends up being a salary dump. And then they take $5 million for the right to negotiate with the South Korean infielder, Kang Kong. And how did, you know, do we know how to pronounce it yet?
It's Gong.
Gong, okay.
Yeah.
Where it sounds like he can play all three infield positions, but he's not a starter. What do we know about him?
We don't know much. That's the thing. We know a lot of things, but not all of them are relevant, maybe. He's the first position player to come over from the KBO, which is the top Korean professional league. There have been other Korean pitchers and Korean position players, but most of them have been players who were developed as minor leaguers here in the U.S., Gong is 27. He's not going to be a minor leaguer. He's going to come straight over and play in the big league. So he's kind of in an unusual position. The KBO plays as a lesser league than MLB, probably something like AA, or maybe AAA, except that it also plays as an extreme hitters league. So he put up really ridiculous numbers over there. But it's really hard to know what to make of those numbers, because it's in a context that is so different from the major leagues. He also has a really high leg kick and a swing that is sort of unusual in the major leagues. So it's hard to know what to make of him. And you'd think that if he profiled as a starter, that other teams would have been willing to bid more than $5 million for the right to negotiate with him. So that suggests he's not going to be one. The flip side of that is that he was the best player in the KBO last year. And so it's hard to really put a ceiling on somebody who was the best player in his league. So I sort of see him as somebody who's going to be an infielder who's going to fill in at a lot of spots, but it wouldn't shock me if he were something somewhat better than that. And if he ended up in a starting job, the Pirates would surely embrace that and find a way to make that work.
We had three guys here in the station that were the best three players in the Center County Baseball League. No thoughts on that. A.J. Burnett. He returns. Charlie, what's your opinion on what potentially he could add to what they're doing?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that he's not the same pitcher he was in 2012 or 2013, and that's not really fair to expect of him given his age. But I also think he first of all, he played hurt last year. He says those problems are behind him. Also, he's a much better fit for the Pirates ballpark and the Pirates situation. I mean, the Pirates are a team built to induce lots of ground balls and to convert those ground balls into outs. The Phillies were not. So, you know, he had a sort of subpar year with Philadelphia, but that was predictable. I mean, the Phillies were not the right team for him. The Pirates are the right team for him. And so there's, I think that expecting a return to his 2013 form is not realistic, but that he figures to be better than he was in Philadelphia last year.
Something that's been very important for the Pirates since they really started turning this around, bullpen depth. What can that look like this season?
It's certainly good enough at this point that they, you know, depending on who's healthy and who pitches well in camp, they could even consider sending a good pitcher like John Holtzcomb or Jared Hughes down to the minor leagues for the first couple of weeks of the season because those players have options. They have a lot of interesting players. I mean, you know, obviously Mark Melancon, Tony Watson, Antonio Bastardo, those are good established major league relievers. They also have several guys who are interesting. And the flip side of that is they also have a bunch of guys at the other end of the bullpen, Sonny Pimentel is one, who are out of options, and they're going to have to show something. So a lot of interesting arms, and the trick for the bullpen will be, first of all, is a guy like John Holtzcomb as legitimate as he seemed down the stretch last year? And secondly, how do you balance the need to retain all the talent in the bullpen with the need to carry the best possible pitchers on the 25-man roster?
What about Pedro Alvarez? What are your thoughts heading into spring training for him?
I think that he's a tremendously frustrating player who has never really blossomed offensively. He's at the point in his career now where he's starting to get expensive as well. And he only has two more years left before he becomes a free agent. He's played his way off of third base and is now at first base where his bat will have to be very good. And, you know, we've been waiting for that season where he puts everything together. And it really hasn't happened. And if it does happen this year, I mean, he's only going to have one more year in which he's going to be really expensive after this one before he hits free agency anyway. So if there's still upside there, he has a limited amount of time to realize it. And if he has a slow start, if he doesn't perform, I think that the Pirates would be well within their rights, especially if somebody like Gong turns out to be a real hitter, to move Alvarez out of the starting lineup and potentially trade him.
I love how you said that. He played his way off of third base. That's something that the public relations department would write. let's make this seem not as bad as it really is.
You can't throw anymore.
Give me an idea, in your opinion, the importance of the opening 2 months for Josh Harrison coming off a career year. Because usually the numbers are the numbers for a guy, and he defied all of that as the season went along. How important are the first 2 months?
I don't know. I think that he will probably provide enough defensive value or figures to be a good enough defensive player that certainly his starting spot is going to be secure through those first 2 months. So from his perspective, I don't think I would go into the season worrying about it. Even if his offense declines a good deal, and I expect it will, he's good enough defensively that he can still provide value. There are people who think that, and I think I kind of agree that just his approach last year was so different, with so many more line drives that it, you know, as much as 2014 was probably a freak season in some ways, some percentage of that has to be real. Mm-hmm. And so I think he's going to take a step backward offensively. I'm hopeful that it won't be too huge a step backward. And, you know, he can certainly take a step back from what he did last season and still be a very good starter in the big leagues.
Charlie, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. We look forward to talking to you many times as the snow melts.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Charlie Wilmoth, BucksDugout.com. Next half hour, Sandy Barber, Penn State's athletic director, will discuss the fine levied and also the reprimand of Patrick Chambers and much more. That's coming up. And Jeff Rice at 24/7 Sports. Don't forget, coming up at 3:07 this morning, Kevin talks about the IndyCar season. 3:07 a.m. right here on WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Well, I'll tell you, listen to Drew Kelly on bass. Isn't it good?
Man.
Whew. Part of the Shamokin Dam Orchestra. Kevin's driving another great Sunbury Motors vehicle this week, a Kia Sorento.
The newly redesigned 2016 Kia Sorento. And one of the things that they redesigned is the suspension on it. It gives you better ride quality, plus a little quieter cabin with the longer doors. Not longer as in back to front, but top to bottom. They wrap around a little bit, seal the cabin off a little bit, and it keeps all the road noise out. Plus, you can have up to 5,000 pounds towing capacity. That's enough for a small camper, or definitely be able to haul the boat this spring, do some fishing with it. 2016 Kia Sorento with V6 all-wheel drive. Also available in the 2-liter turbo four-cylinder that will help you visit the gas station a lot less, but still give you plenty of power. And all the new controls inside are redesigned. The controls inside are redesigned in new positions and everything to be a little bit more comfortable to drive. Check it out at Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury. That's where you'll find Lincoln and Hyundai. But if you'd like to find the Kia Sorento, you'll find that on the Kia dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Fabulous. All right. Kevin wants to talk about the upcoming IndyCar season.
No, IndyCar not really.
Media day today.
Not really.
And on behalf of America, no. Do you feel out of step?
No. I think racing is quite popular in this area.
I'm not talking about Route 15.
Not that kind of racing. No. No, not that kind of racing.
I'm just telling you. It's just not, you know. Really? No. So you get a lot of people coming up to you all the time saying, hey, you guys need to talk more racing?
No, we just talk racing. You know, we just, like, NASCAR obviously is really big right now with the Daytona 500. I mean, what other sport has their biggest event as the first one of the season?
Yeah, that tells you something.
Well, but it makes complete sense. You know, it's February. There's not a whole lot going on. Football season's over. Baseball hasn't started yet. You know, it's easy to get the attention. I think this was – I don't know if they planned it this way or if it just kind of happened this way, but you have to give NASCAR credit. Putting Daytona in February was really a brilliant move, and it turned out to be even more brilliant as the years have gone on.
And then why have the ratings gone down each year as the year's gone on?
The ratings may have gone down, but I don't know that attendance is drastically down.
I see a lot of empty seats.
Well, I think that, to me, the big problem with NASCAR I'll put it to you this way. NASCAR's big problem is this. I think there are too many races,
and it goes on, the season goes on forever. And I think the new format was supposed to be more interesting, but I think it made it more confusing as to how who wins the championship. Then you look on the other side, and you have IndyCar and Formula One, and I think those seasons are too spread apart, so you have no idea, is this a weekend for a race or not? I've given this a lot of thought.
Much more thought than myself and the audience combined. Wow. All right. Back to officiating for a moment. Try and get the show back on track. I gave you a moment. Give me a credit.
You did. It was a brief moment, and then it was gone.
I'm regretting the moment.
Actually, so am I.
Like, okay, fine. Look, officiating is obviously very important to anything. I think whenever there's, for example, an internal matter, okay, you got to handle it. I understand that. But mistakes do happen. And I'm not big about sticking your head in the sand. But just get out there, talk about it, get it done. Again, if there's a question about what somebody saw, why they called it a certain way, what the rule happens to be, whatever, okay? I'm just not big on, the student athlete. Well, we need to protect the student athlete more. It's amazing how the 19-year-old quarterback can throw an interception and he's got to go into the media room and start talking about it. But the 49-year-old official who made a call, we're like going, okay, well, no, you can't talk to him. Really? Really? You're kidding me, right? You got to be kidding. I mean, that's what really strikes me. Is that every other part of this thing you're accountable for. And that part, look, show replays. Show what the heck you're looking at. What are they looking at? The flagrant foul? People are not showing up at games in a sheepskin and a club. Okay? People are civilized. You can find out what the deal is. The people at home should not have more freedom as to what's going on than the people in the park. I mean, everybody in the board, we're in the dark all the time as we do games, as they go over to check the monitor for something. You're like, I don't know, what are they checking the monitor? I have no idea. And then we got to guess as to what it is. And to be honest with you, we're actually pretty good at guessing. But, you've got to be able to... You got to be able to tell everybody what's going on. The lead ref should be mic'd and should announce to the crowd, this is what we're looking at. This is the result of what we're looking at. Show it on the replay board. What are you worried about? What are you fearing? I want people to be in the arena. I want them in the arena. And they're not helping out in that regard. You got to get attendance up. If you're going to get attendance up, you got to be able to do some things that allow. And part of it is you can't keep keeping people away from the arena and making the home thing more popular because you think that they might get mad about officiating. You just can't. And look, not one of these guys is deliberately trying to do something. Not one of them is. None. Zero. They're all trying to enhance their own reputations. They're all trying to, you know, they want that level of respect as they do this. They want to work the big tournaments. They want to work the NCAA tournament. They want to get rehired. So you're not sitting there saying, I'm going to swing this game tonight. That's not how it works. Did he make a mistake? Yeah, he made a mistake. Did he get it wrong? Yeah, he got it wrong. He got it dead wrong. But that also happens. Just like Pat made calls in the game, and so did Mark Turgeon, that weren't right. Just like Mello Trimble made mistakes in the game. Just like DJ Newbill made mistakes in the game. Just like I made an announcing mistake here and there, a misidentification, whatever. We all make mistakes as part of what's going on in the game. Now, me making a mistake is the least one, but I'll recognize I do. Because what, my mistake doesn't affect the game. Theirs do. But I also know I make them as time goes. And so do they. But you got to be able to respect and have respect for them as adults. Say, hey, look, we're going to limit it to three questions, but some of you wanted to talk to the officials after the game. Here they are. One question, two questions, three questions. We're done. What's wrong with that? It's okay to talk to the 18-year-old. It's okay to show the 18-year-old's interception on the big board. But it's not okay to show the 49-year-old's mistake on the call he made? Really? Really? No offense, but there's something inherently wrong with that. And I'm not saying show it on the big board to show that they're not doing something right. I'm saying you should be showing it because the people at home are looking at it. I want people in the stadium and the arena. I don't want them sitting at home. Game's better when they're at the game.